The Inside Ellen Road podcast is sponsored by PR Supplies at Unit 2 Wither Park Industrial Estate, Leeds, postcode LS53AP. Check out PR Supplies on Facebook for all your home retail needs. Hello, welcome back to the Inside Elland Road podcast. It's the international break, which is a time to rest, decompress from a hectic championship season and prepare to come back renewed, reinvigorated and highly motivated for the final 5 weeks of the season with the knife between the teeth. That is, unless you are A, Welsh, or B, a football journalist. Graham Smith, you're a man of a certain age. Those flecks of white in that weak chin disguising beard of yours certainly tell a story. How does the international break sit with you and your advancing years?
Hello.
I had fun writing that one.
Yeah, I bet you did. International breaks, not a fan generally, although in this season it almost feels like a bit of respite, doesn't it?
It feels like a sit down
in a comfy chair after a long day digging.
Careful, because if you sit down long enough in a comfy chair, you'll fall asleep with your arms folded.
I won't get back up again, and I have to make that noise as well when I sink into the chair. Like that. Yeah, not a big fan of international breaks, but this one at least has a little bit of Leeds United intrigue, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. I mean, it's got a lot of Leeds United jeopardy as well, because you were saying yesterday, can you imagine if Joe Roden or Ethan Ampadu was on the receiving end of a Glenn Kamara reducer in that Wales-Finland game? It would be uproarious, to say the least, if one of Leeds' key players was ruled out because of a challenge from one of their teammates. It's got plenty of interesting subplots that we can sink our teeth into in over the next sort of 7 to 9 days.
Is there a chance at all that all five men go for the same ball at once? Is there a scenario you can envisage where all five of them go for the same loose ball?
So you've got Roberts and James on the right wing.
Yeah.
Joe Roden as your right-sided centre-back. Ethan Ampadu probably in midfield.
Yeah. So it could happen. Can you imagine? Can you imagine Daniel Farke sat on his sofa spitting crumbs of cake everywhere as all five men go for the same loose 50-50 ball? honestly, I'd back Glenn Kamara to turn out of that with the ball, with a lovely little disguise, and then just pop it off to someone.
What, old Snake Hips?
Old Snake Hips himself. Who do you want to win that game?
Wales.
Do you?
Yeah.
Because of Conor Roberts and his moustache?
Well, look, I think there needs to be some representation at the Euros from a very strong upper lip. But no, I just think you've got four Leeds players in that team. I think we can allow for Glenn Kamara maybe being a bit down in the dumps for a few days. But four of the Leeds lads, I'm not so sure.
I don't think I could take it if I knew that Glenn Kamara was down in the dumps.
Yeah, I know, but that's just, you know, that's you.
It'll be an interesting one, won't it? Ampadu has played three times against Kamara in Finland and has never lost. In fact, I don't think Wales have lost to Finland. Is that right? And you would probably say they'd be the favourites, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I'd probably say they're favourites. Let me just check, see who the bookies got as favourites.
I mean, I don't care what the bookies say.
But
I was thinking more in terms of your international European football perversion, nerdery or obsession, whichever word you'd like to be associated with. I thought maybe you'd have a view on which of those squads was the best.
I'd say that Wales, being at home, having quite a settled squad, is probably the team that is favourites. Don't really have too much of an interest in Finnish football, to be honest with you. You know that HJK Helsinki are a big club over there. I actually don't know too many Finnish teams. Maybe I will when I'm 28. Who knows?
Yeah, maybe you'll spend a year of your life researching Finnish football. Interesting one. I can see a Wales win, and it probably is better for us if Wales win, because, you know, four Leeds players, a lot more content than just one Leeds player progress into the final. But with so much riding on the game, it feels a bit unique that five Leeds players are clashing in the one game, because we haven't really had that, have we? We had a lot of interest around Calvin Phillips when he was playing for England. Then, you know, they played against North Macedonia, played against Gianni Alioski, which kind of brought up the question, how has Calvin explained Gianni Alioski to the rest of the England dressing room? Like, how has he pre-warned them about what he was going to be like? And then we've had, you know, one or two games where players have come up against, Click came up against, I think he might have played North Macedonia.
Poland played England as well.
Yeah, I was going to say they played England and Germany. As well. But I think for some reason, we didn't get a Click versus Calvin battle. I think one of them was missing for some reason.
Look at what they took from us.
Look at what we could have had. Look at what we could have won. So it is fairly unique, this one. I mean, five is a lot of players. I'm presuming they all start. Would they all start? Who's in danger of not starting?
I think they all start, yeah. Ampadu and James are going to get their 50th cap. Roden is pretty much nailed on to start. Connor Roberts, again, he's got the most caps out of the lot of them, I think.
Yeah, he's on 50, 54, 55 odd, something like that.
Yeah.
It strikes me as pretty special that Ethan Ampadu is 23 years of age and is about to get his 50th international cap. Like, he has been around the block with Wales a long old time. He's played at two major international tournaments already, and he's only 23. I mean, when I spoke to him last week, on the Thursday before the Millwall game, I asked him about Gareth Bale's record, and I didn't expect him to say, yeah, I'm coming for it. But he's got to be in with a shout. If he stays fit, he's 23 now, he's got 50 caps, he could easily hit 100 and go beyond.
Well, yeah, Gareth Bale's is, what, 111 caps, 41 goals, so he probably needs to get a bit of a move on in the goals department. But yeah, Ampadu's on 40. He doesn't actually have an international goal. Ampadu's on 49. Who are the others that you think are in? I mean, Wayne Hennessy and Chris Gunter, both on 109 each. Neville Southall on 92. Ashley Williams, 86. Gary Speed, 85. Aaron Ramsey and Ben Davies are both on 84, but are still both active.
But he's 23.
I know.
It's remarkable. But he did start playing international football at a senior level at about 17, didn't he? So.
Well, he actually, Graham, sorry, just going to stop you there. He actually made his professional debut at 15, playing for Exeter City.
Yes, correct.
And his international debut came when he was 17.
Like I just said, that's right. he's had an unreal season for Leeds, hasn't he? I mean, just incredible.
What more needs to be said other than it's 19 and a half hours consecutively that he and Joe Roden haven't conceded from open play as a central defensive partnership in the league?
It's just, I don't think you can really put into words how mental that record is. Like, it's ridiculous. It is ridiculous that Leeds have not conceded an open play goal in 2024, and we are sat here on the 21st of March. That's
spring has sprung.
Spring has sprung, and Leeds have not sprung a leak in open play.
Very good.
All year. You would give the entire team and you'd give Farke credit for it, but you have to really single out the central defensive pairing because their form has been so good together. Like, they play the positions really, really nicely together, and they bring a lot to the table. And I think we've said before, there was a stage in the first half of the season where if you'd said Pascal Struyck will be out for 3 months, you'd have sucked air in through your teeth, wouldn't you? And thought, oh, that's not good. That's not going to look good. And yet, 12 wins out of 13. 12 wins out of 13.
I maybe would have just winced because I don't have gaps in my Nashers, unlike yourself.
I don't have gaps in. it's going to be one of these. It's going to be one of these episodes, isn't it?
Touchy, you just, I think.
You just poke away like Johnny Alioski at a at an unsuspecting opponent.
I don't do it unprompted. You know, I posted an update from Jorginho Rutter last night saying that his hernia surgery had gone well. You decided to call me Dr. Donoghue. You know, that clearly wasn't sincere, was it?
No, it really wasn't.
You know, funnily enough, Graham, I was simply doing my job. I was reporting the news, and it's something which elite fans care about.
Or were you, in the words of Daniel Farke, overinterpreting the news? Tell me what you tweeted. tell me what you tweeted.
Right, okay. Do you want it word for word?
I want it verbatim.
Yeah. Jorginho Rutter's minor hernia procedure a success.
Is it?
Well, he said, "Bonjour, everybody. Everything was good. Thanks for your messages."
Okay, so that means that he's come through the anesthesia, and you know they believe that they've fixed the problem. I want to see this wild horse running on the track before I start throwing huge amounts of money behind has been successful. You think of all the clubs actually that would probably exercise a little caution, a little post-op caution, it would probably be Leeds United. I mean, Leeds were very, very confident, weren't they, that this was a minor thing. And I think there's been an erroneous conflation of Struyck's second injury with this hernia op that he had himself early in the season. People have forgotten that Struyck came back and played, was it 8 games after he had the hernia op? And he was back. He was back within a very short, it might have been inside 2 weeks that he was back. So yeah, Leeds were very, very confident that it would be a very, very short period out for Rutter, and he might even be available for Watford. You were the one that told me that he'd flown to Munich, weren't you, Rutter? Yeah. Which made me think that he's probably gone to see Dr. Ulrich Mushevek, who operated on Patrick Bamford back when Leeds were in Spain in the mid-season World Cup break. And I remember looking into that kind of the Mushevek, whatever, however you say it, repair, which is a couple of sutures which avoids more severe and invasive surgery, and it allows players to be back running within something like 3 days, 4 days. So if he's had that, if that's what he's had, then it should be a relatively short time before we see him back on the pitch producing stepovers.
Have you had any hernia surgery in
no.
your time,
No.
Is that not something which tends to occur as the older you get? Reaching for the top shelf or something.
I don't claim to be an expert in that, but what I've always also said is only very good footballers get injuries. I've played football for a large part of my life, and because I'm so poor at it, I've never picked up a footballing injury. Not really. I mean, a slight twisted ankle here and there, but I once broke a toe in the style of Archie Gray kicking a door frame. But I've never had a proper footballing injury, and I maintain that it's only very good footballers that get them.
Well, I must be excellent then, because I'm made of glass. Honestly, can't stay fit. I mean, on Jorginho Rutter then, do you reckon he'll be in the starting 11 then for Watford?
I hope so. I do hope so, because he's so important to this team in the 10 role. He's so important. The amount of times that you've kind of nudged me during a game and said, Jorginho gets you out of so many situations and tight spots because of his dribbling ability. And he does. Like, it is a bit of a cheat code in the Championship to have a player who can beat players so easily like he does. And it almost doesn't matter if he's got two players around him. He can still operate, you know, in a phone box. And he's away, you know, little turn, little drag back, step over, whatever it is, roulette, and he's gone. And we saw that, didn't we? You know, even when he's not having his best games, like against Millwall, because he wasn't fantastic in the first half, not everything he tried worked. Yet he comes out of that game standing ovation because he's got two assists and he's made the difference in a game where all Leeds really needed to do was stay solid at set pieces and then let their quality show. Routier was the quality that showed, wasn't he? Because his assist for Dan James, the Routier one was just fairly routine knocking down of a high ball, but he knocked it down into Nyonto's path and he, you know, delivered the pass. That goal was mostly about Nyonto. The second one, the way Routier took on his man, got past him enough to pick out Daniel James at the back post, was fantastic attacking midfield play. And that was assist number 18, wasn't it, in all competitions 18, this season? Yeah.
16 in the league, the most by any championship player. Yeah, just pretty impressive stuff, really, when you think about the fact that he wasn't ostensibly known as a creative player. And that's something he said himself this season. You know, when we've spoken to him a couple of times, you know, he said that wasn't really his game. And yet he's found that little niche. And again, if he can add that, if he can add goal scoring, if he can add finishing to the undoubted creativity and ball carrying that he has, then Leeds have got a real, real player on their hands. Just having a look at Junior, little natter on there, at who has attempted the most dribbles in the championship this season, because I had a feeling that it could be Jorginho. And I'm right. You know, it's not often that I am, but 235 dribbles attempted in the championship this season. 104 of those successful, which is second only to Jack Clark, who's been successful with 122 of his. So, yeah, he's very good at going past his man.
And we were crying out for a 10. You know, Farke was crying out for a 10 in the summer window. He talked about not really having a natural 10, but he said that they did have options, you know, if they had to go with what they had. We've kind of been crying out for one since Pablo left the club. They haven't really had that kind of a player, that kind of a forward-thinking genius, for lack of a better word, who can spot a pass through lines and put somebody in on goal, in behind the defence, or just nutmeg people for fun. And I suppose Rafinha had so much ability that he probably could have played there, but he was so good coming in off the wing, cutting in on his left foot, that you kind of had to have him out wide. His crossing ability was great, and some of the crossfield passes he produced were fantastic. And of course, he could come inside and shoot. We haven't really had a 10 that to get excited about, not really, for a long time at Leeds, and I think they've got one now. Like, I really do think that Routier, his profile and how much better he's got at holding the ball up. Like, when the ball goes into him, it doesn't stick 100% of the time, but it sticks a darn sight more of the time now than it did. Like, do you remember when he played at Chelsea in the Premier League and the ball just bounced off him in every direction? Oh. He is so much better now at holding it up, holding off a defender and then either rolling him or finding a pass. And that was a big part of the reason why Farke decided, actually, no, I'm going to play him there now, because he's got so much better at that. And yeah, the goal scoring thing, we've mentioned it so many times. If that comes, then he will be worth more than what Leeds paid for him, I think. But that's just got to come yet. He's got to do all of this in the Premier League, hasn't he? You know, that's the kind of the next step for him, will be to tear up the Premier League and to get assists and maybe a few goals there. But the Championship, I mean, you can't say he's completed it because they haven't got promoted, but there are very, very few players who get 18 assists or more in a Championship season. Very few. Buendia got like 16, I think, one season.
Buendia did do very well. Which year was that? Let me check.
Would have been 19. No, that was the season Leeds went up. So 18, 19, and then
2021. Yeah.
I don't think he got as many as 18.
Buendia, you know, did get 16. Wow. Impressive. There you go. I mean, he did also get 15 goals.
But yeah. I mean, he was still absolutely... We will take nothing away from Buendia because he was outrageous. And that's why people called him a Championship cheat code.
Yeah, he only got 12 assists and 8 goals in that 18-19 season when Norwich went up as well. So,
yeah.
In fact, in that season, Syed Benrahma was the player with the most assists, and he only got 14. So Jorginho's already got two more than him. And
that just shows, doesn't it? These are players that were spoken about. You know, Leeds fans have spoken about these players as players they needed to get when they went into the Prem. You know, these were the kind of players they needed. And they found themselves with one. You know, it just so happened that they bought him as a striker for a relegation battle in the Premier League. But all of that's by the by now, because people are actually enjoying. In fact, this might be the most enjoyable it can get.
Yeah, we don't need to put a ceiling on enjoyment, I
think. I'm not doing that. What I'm saying is, just enjoy this.
I think people might enjoy it a bit more on May the 4th if things go well.
No. You need to enjoy it right now, because
I am.
Goodness knows. Like, say Leeds go up, right? And I still stick in with my automatic promotion prediction. That's looking better and better all the time in comparison with your playoff prediction. If they go up, are they going to win anywhere near as many games as this? No, they are not. Even if they have a Bielsa top 10 type season, they're not going to win as many games as they have this season. It's not going to be as routinely enjoyable. And you're probably going to take a few beatings from teams that are in a different stratosphere altogether, because that is the lot of a newly promoted team. If you go up and you do something special like Leeds did with Bielsa, it's amazing, but it's still not as, there's still not the same routine, regular dopamine hits that you get in the Championship when you're a very, very good team.
I agree. Yeah, I'm not disagreeing with you there. I'm just saying that there might be a point in time in 6 weeks when it is better to enjoy yourself.
Yeah, potentially. And now that the fixtures on the final day have been dropped to 12:30, think how much time there will be for people to enjoy themselves if Leeds go up. Think of the amount of the sheer number of enjoyment beverages people will manage to consume. I could honestly see the city being drunk dry if it all goes to plan for Leeds. But I suppose the ideal is that you sort it out before then, because The idea of going into that Southampton game, I mean, I can't even believe that they're playing Southampton on the final game. It's incredible. But can you imagine if both of those sides could go up automatically on that last day, or drop into the playoffs, and it's all still jeopardy? Can you imagine the nerves around Elland Road at kickoff at 12:30?
It would be incredible. I think you'd have so many people just not sleeping the night before, just looking at the league table, looking at the various permutations that could come of it. I'm sure that some Leeds fans would figure out where the Southampton team was staying, and they'd wish them well and say, look, here, lads, here are some fireworks at 3 o'clock in the morning. You know, best of luck tomorrow. May the best team win. May the victor receive the spoils. It'd be excellent. I mean, from a very selfish perspective, it would be excellent to report on something like that, where the jeopardy is so palpable. But yeah, I think most people of a Leeds persuasion would want that tied up. Those who want thrill seekers would probably want it tied up before that final game, so it can be a procession almost.
Yeah.
And we are talking about, when we say it being tied up, Leeds could have secured automatic promotion by the time they go into the final game of the season, but they might still be in with a shout of the title. So there are various different scenarios which could play out, and things which different teams could be fighting for at that stage.
Yeah, you're right. I think it's going to be an incredible finish at both ends of the Championship table. I actually think this season, whilst, yes, we have seen a lot of dross, and there's been some teams that you really would not enjoy to see them week in, week out, the way the table is shaped up at both ends this season is pretty spectacular. I think the Championship has delivered again in a way that the Championship often does deliver, in that it's just wildly, wildly competitive in terms of results, maybe not in terms of quality at either end of the table or entertainment factor. Yeah, it's difficult to say who will be in the playoffs. It's impossible to say who will be, other than Leeds, in the automatics, because I don't know that Leicester might still drop out of it, the automatic places, if even temporarily, before assuming first or second place. It's just felt like over the last few weeks that their air of invincibility, and that's what it was, like everyone was convinced they were gone, like they were away. 17 points clear of Leeds, they had it nailed, and all of a sudden they've been dragged back in, and they are properly in it now. They really are.
They are. They're very much in it. And we heard over the past few days, Connor Cody was on the Monday Night Club on BBC Five Live, and he was dragged into a discussion about Leeds and how they've been doing this season, or rather in 2024. And you had a little bit to say on that. You wrote a sort of a little op-ed. Would you call it an op-ed? On what Cody had to say, and how, yes, he might not be playing week in, week out for Leicester, but he's still a very, very prominent voice in the Foxes dressing room. And it provides a window into the thinking over there at Seagrave, who, by the way, if anyone wanted to get directions to Leicester's training ground, I'm sure Jack Harrison would probably be able to point you in the right direction. But yeah, they've got, I mean, looking at the fixtures, right, Leeds I think have the best running. I say best in terms of on paper the fixtures that would look the easiest. Southampton Ipswich I think have the most difficult, and then you've got Leicester still have Norwich on Easter Monday, they have West Brom that they've got on April the 20th. They've got Southampton, that game being rescheduled due to the FA Cup. That's on the 23rd of April, so that's a midweek, 8 o'clock kickoff. Apart from that, you're not looking at too many other difficult games. Maybe Preston away on the penultimate game of the season. But it's not quite like Ipswich's, which is, I feel like Bielsa in that first season. Ipswich. They've got Southampton still to play. They still have Norwich away to play. They've got Borough, which again won't be too easy. Coventry away, which needs rescheduling. Hull away as well. You know, lots of teams who are very much in with a chance of getting the playoffs or automatic promotion. So, yeah, we'll just have to wait and see. But it's really exciting. I feel like every single result, every single game, we're having to keep an eye on, because it's changing the fabric of how this table is lining up.
Yeah, the table does change with results. That's generally how it works.
Right, that's it. Cut. That's it. We're only doing a 27-minute episode this week.
I was chatting to an Ipswich fan last night.
Traitor.
I like to do a bit of
fraternizing with the enemy, are we?
Just doing a bit of podcast preparation. You might like to try it sometime. And he was saying he's dreading the Norwich game. His sister's boyfriend is a Norwich fan, and he says he won't be able to be in the same room as him for that game. He says they'll have to watch it separately. But what he dreads more is the thought of getting Norwich in the playoffs. He said, because that would just feel too much. It would be, there'd be too much riding on it. You know, it would be like Leeds United and Manchester United in a cup final. So, you know, it's not just there's something on the line at the end of it if you win, but it's the fact that it's the team you least accept losing to. And he's relatively terrified about that. Wes Burns being injured and out for the season is terrifying for them. Connor Chaplin's out as well, I think. I think so, but I don't think it's as serious. At least that's what my Ipswich mole was telling me. That's one for you to check. And we have said all along, haven't we? And we're dying to be right at some stage that Ipswich's squad would creak under the demand of this season, because it's not as deep and it's not got the same quality as a Leeds on paper, at least. But maybe they're just gonna ride, the tractor's just gonna coast for the entire length of the A1, as they sometimes do, and everyone else is just going to have to get used to it and get behind them. But if you're playing teams like Norwich and teams like Coventry especially, you're going to have to be absolutely on it, because they're all going to be gunning for those playoff spots. And Coventry just seem to be in this habit of coming good in the second half of seasons under Mark Robbins. So there's a lot to look out for. There's a lot.
Shall I tell you what I'm quite enjoying?
Go on.
How all season Daniel Farker has said, you know, when we get to game day 40 or game day 43, then that is when we'll look at the table. We're at game day 38 and he's still saying, you know, we're not quite there yet. Not looking at the table. Points tallies are important, but the table's not very important. Daniel, it's your topic. Come on. 82 points, 81 points. That's massive.
Yeah. On game day 42, let's say, I'm going to go to the press conference dressed as the table. I'm going to print out, the table on a t-shirt, and then I might have the home table down the front of my right leg and the away table down the front of my left leg. And maybe on the back, I don't know, what alternative table would you have? Predicted table? Supercomputer table? never. Hell would have to freeze over. That then it will become his topic and he will have to address the table. How does the table look, Daniel? I can't wait. I can't wait for that when Popey finally gets to press him on that. He's been very consistent all season, hasn't he, Farker? He's never really wavered in his kind of approach to talking about rivals, talking about the table. He hasn't really tried any mind games.
But we might see that going into the final few games. I don't think that's beyond him.
Yeah, it would be nice. You know, when he does his little eyelid scratch when he tells what he believes to be a very funny joke. I'd like to see a little bit more devilment from him.
Yes, well, we are only going to have 7 or 8 players, so I might have to go check my boots in the boot room during the international break.
What boots do you think he would wear? I could see him in a pair of black Puma Kings.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah, absolutely. 100%. None of this fancy green and yellow mercurials or anything. You know, proper big tongues on them as well.
Yeah.
With the band that sometimes players wear around the tongue, that as well. Puma Kings is a great shout. I used to have a pair of all black Nike Tiempos, thinking, you know, being a no nonsense defender, which was slowly pushed out to fullback and then the bench and then out of junior football. But that was my boot of choice. I can see him not messing around with any of the fancy stuff. Yeah, I can see him being like, you know, fashion statement is not my topic on the football pitch.
Yeah, I would imagine that Neil Harris probably went into the Millwall boot room on day one of his second reign with a black permanent marker and coloured in all the boots, because that's how a Millwall team should look. He talks a lot about how a Millwall team should look, shouldn't he? And has there been a player who physically embodies how Millwall should look more than Jake Cooper?
Probably in yesteryear, but not in the modern era, no. That was
a spectacle. And I don't often like to peddle rumors, but I thought, you know, this is probably one that we needed to discuss. I heard that as Routere was being wheeled into the operating theatre, that Jake Cooper blocked him off, blocked his path to the operating theatre. And what's more, Stephen Martin still didn't give him a second yellow card.
Held his hands up to say, what? Yeah, I've travelled all the way to Munich. No. It's the international break. I've not been called up. I'm on holiday. Got a few days
incredible.
Off.
Incredible. Absolutely incredible. I don't think I've ever seen the likes of it. I've never seen a player, I tweeted this, never seen a player as desperate for a second yellow or a referee so desperate not to give it. It was utterly bizarre, just incredible. He committed at least four yellow card challenges.
That was in the first half.
Yeah, correct. It was wild, absolutely wild. The leniency was sensational.
Just checking here, actually. Has Steve Martin brandished a red card this season?
With the arms on Stephen Martin, you'd be brandishing cards left, right, and centre. I'd have my arms in the air, out of my sleeves at every opportunity if I had arms like referee Steve Martin.
There were a few comments about the referee's appearance on social media, which obviously we can't repeat, but I did sort of give Graham a little nudge and vice versa during the game that people had maybe been rather creative with, which we did have a good chuckle at. So if you were one of those people who were, you know, taking the mickey, we'll not say it went any further than that, but if you were taking the mick out of the referee's appearance or demeanor, then congratulations, you did get a little chuckle that you've heard on this podcast many a time from Graham.
We should say as well, it's not bullying. You don't bully someone, referee or otherwise, for having large biceps. So if anything, it's a compliment that he should wear with pride that we exactly. noticed how chiseled and sculpted his upper torso was. Sadly, it didn't help him in the game. I'm not sure if the assessor will give marks for definition, but keep at the weights.
You know what the irony is about Steve Martin, and it's not that he's not funny. Yeah, it's not that he shares that name. It's that he's shown two red cards this season. And did you know who one of them was for?
Go on.
It was Joe Roden for a second yellow at Hull.
Oh, amazing. Oh, that's actually incredible. He was the one.
Yeah.
I mean, to be fair, I don't think I argued with either. Thinking back, I'd have to watch them again. And I don't think I had too much of a problem with that. And I remember Farke didn't have much of a problem with it either. Am I right in saying that Farke was a bit more critical of Rodon? In fact, he held it against him for a couple of weeks. You know, when people were talking about how good he'd been, he was talking about the situations with the yellow cards. So I'd have to watch them back. But that is funny. That's very, very funny. You probably got Rodon, who was poleaxed by Jake Cooper in the penalty area, thinking, hang on a minute. This referee couldn't wait to send me off with two yellows, and here he is. Oh, that's amazing.
He did have a word with the fourth official, didn't he, Rodon, when he was taken off for treatment after being kneed in the chest and or chin by Cooper inside the box. But I wonder if he was making that point.
He cupped his hand over his mouth. So yet again, the YEP's lip reader, who's been on retainer for decades now but has never actually been able to prove a case, was stifled again. I think one of the regulator's new powers should be to ban players cupping their hands over their mouths so we can see what's actually being said.
I think that's a terrible idea.
You want to clean up football? Let's start with the language. That Millwall performance from Leeds, it felt very routine, didn't it? It felt like...
Yep. I was just about to say routine was the word.
This is Leeds United. This is what they do. That's how it felt. Defensively solid. Defended set piece as well. There was only one where Melier was a bit of a flappy wazzo, and he recovered from that. Leeds recovered from that. And they probably could have scored three or four, couldn't they? You know, Dan James hit the post with a lovely strike. What that pause was about when Ruter fed him in front of goal, deary me, I thought for a minute he'd glitched, like he was buffering in the penalty area and his mind had just gone blank and he'd lost himself, because he had the ball at his feet for what felt like, it was probably only 2 seconds, but it felt like an eternity before he finally dispatched it. But watching it back, I realised what he was trying to do. He was trying to make Jake Cooper score an own goal. Because his shot went in off Cooper. They could have scored more, couldn't they? And it could have been a bit more comfortable, but it never felt like, once the first goal went in, because of that ridiculous stat about how many games Leeds have won from one scoring the first goal, it just doesn't feel in jeopardy anymore, does it? Like they are almost taking the nerves out of games.
Yeah, and I think going back to your previous point about Jorginho Rutter completing the championship, the closest that you could probably get to completing the championship at this stage of the season is by going first, which of course Leeds did after beating Millwall for the first time this season, and couldn't really have done it at a better time. to be honest, going into the international break, sitting pretty at the top for 12, 14 days, just making sure that anyone of a Leicester persuasion just has that wants to look at the championship table has to look that they've been toppled. It's not as though they've got a game 2 days later, or you know, they've got the late kickoff and they're able to right the wrongs. They've got to sit there. They've got to stew on it. And what sort of psychological advantage or disadvantage that gives Leeds or Leicester, we'll just have to wait and see in the results that come in the next couple of weeks. But it's a nice little treat, Farker said, didn't he, for his players. He's not paying too much attention to it, but considering that his squad have been on such a tear recently and have done so well to get themselves back into not just the promotion fight, but the title fight, it serves as a little reward for them, but one that they must not dwell on.
Yes and no. Like, I think he was right in saying for a few days we should enjoy this,
mm-hmm.
because Leicester have been top of the table since 20th of September, and Leeds at that stage were, I don't know, 6th, 7th, 8th. And we've banged on about it a lot, but the 17-point gap, to overcome that and to go top, in Connor Cody's words, by goal difference or whatever, is just a remarkable achievement that needs to be recognised. Like, you can't just go on to the next one now. You know, we go again. We don't let this slip. I think you have to recognise what you've done, and the international break just affords Leeds a little chance to do that. Now, obviously, Ampadu, Rodon, Roberts, James, Kamara, all the players who are on international duty this week will have since turned their focus to those games, but they must be feeling 10 foot tall, you know, and I wonder if they're even almost a bit bewildered by it. You know, if maybe it's a bit like climbing a mountain and, you know, you turn around and you look back to see the car park that now looks like a dot, you know, down way down at the bottom. And you think, oh my word, like, look how far I've come. I wonder if it's like that for these players, because I suppose when you're taking it game by game as they have done and just focusing on the next opponent, it's like just taking another step, isn't it? Your head's down, this is the next game, this is the next game, and then all of a sudden you're top of the table. And very few people expected that. So, least of all, the people that you will find in my mentions when they lost West Brom. Because, and I'm going to say this now, if you have a little horrible sick feeling in your stomach that you might have been one of those people calling for Farker to be sacked, or telling local journalists that the problem was we weren't asking tough enough questions and that's why Leeds were out of form, there's still time to go back and rewrite history and delete those so that when I turn to it again, in order to maybe highlight just how low an ebb Leeds were at compared with the high they're at now, that you won't be there. Your name will not be found. Poof, gone, like a ghost.
That's a warning. That's an ominous warning. And I tell you what, I would encourage anyone who thinks that they may be in that sphere or that group to take his advice, because he will go in on you. And he'll not be pleasant.
that's a complete mischaracterization of
it's absolutely not. What did you say this morning about who mustaches are for? I'm not going to repeat it, and I don't want you to either.
I should you say said, on the record that was aimed at
that's
you.
That's not going on the record.
I should say that was aimed at you and not Connor Roberts or anyone else who looks fantastic with a mustache, I'm sure. Things are said, you know. And it's just banter, you know, changing room banter. And, but you know, we're a team and everyone just has the same goal in mind. So, yeah.
Mm. I did actually get a reply or a tweet yesterday to the, what was it? I think it was in response to the Jorginho hernia thing. And it was by Johnny Stack, LUFC. He said, Joe Donoghue, will you commit to keeping the tash for as long as Roberts does? I believe he is keeping it until we lose. I feel you two have become intertwined based on your facial hair. Now, look, I'm not the one saying it. That's other people saying it. I'm happy to be intertwined. I know that you're bothers happy. You.
You're happy for your mustache to be intertwined with Conor Roberts' mustache. That's a strange thing to say on a podcast, Joe. No, they suit you both. You know, he looks a lot more RAF pilot than you do, I would say. And yeah. I think he's playing up to it massively. Like, I have a suspicion that when the Welsh team photographer has been about this week, that he's been pulling faces deliberately designed to make him look more fighter pilot-esque. I just have a suspicion that he knows the look that he's conveying, and he's playing up to it. Did you see the tunnel video of them coming back down the tunnel after the win against Millwall? And he just walked.
Was it the Georgie Let's Go video?
There was a separate one. I think they do Georgie's a video for Georgie on his own now. But the one where some of the team came back down, and some of them you can see they feel a little bit pressed into like reacting or celebrating, yeah. You know, because the camera's there. And Conor Roberts just bowls down the tunnel, walking as if he's just ridden a horse for 4 days across the savannah, and just smiles this really benign, smug smile. And the mustache just sets it off, an absolute treat. I would recommend you go back and watch it.
I might do. Yeah, I did enjoy watching Conor Roberts and Joe Roden trying to guess whose historic haircuts from their teammates were. They did Joffy. They really did Joffy very unfairly from an old picture of his Barnet from when he was at Wigan. But there were a few good ones as well. I like that as well. Jorginho's just always in the background of these things.
He's everywhere. You know,
He's absolutely everywhere.
He is everywhere, making noise. I mean, it was like that when they had the Welsh lads in for that chat for Welsh TV, and Ruter ended up in the video. He got no business whatsoever being in a video about Wales, and there he was, giving his opinion on whether Swansea was better than Cardiff or not. He's obviously not been to Tenby, the real jewel in the Welsh crown.
He's clearly not been to Borth. I've been to Borth. Which I didn't think was a real place. It sounds like a planet from the Star Wars galaxy, but it is actually quite nice during the summer.
Mold? Has he been to Mold? Probably not.
No, I don't think there's much mold in any footballer's life, to be honest with you. that gets sorted pretty quickly. Okay, in recent weeks, we've been asked to sort of rank the press food that we get. And given that it is the international break, that's probably the best opportunity that we have when there's no, you know, pressing matters to discuss from a Leeds United perspective. And we've got through all of the title chat and the top being top of the table stuff. So what I did yesterday is I sort of drafted up a 1 to 20 of the press food league table that in my opinion is correct and should not be scrutinized too closely. While I was doing this, I thought, okay, I'm probably going to have to appease Graham. I'd like to put Chelsea first, but I think Spurs just takes the biscuit. So I've gone Spurs first, Chelsea second, Leicester third, Arsenal fourth, Huddersfield fifth.
What?
And I know you're not going to agree with that one, but Huddersfield, they did do good breakfast grub. Hull sixth, Bristol City with the vegetarian option, seven. Southampton, Liverpool, Wolves, Newcastle, Man United, West Ham, then Leeds in 14th. It's not the best, it's not the worst, but, you know, something to improve upon next year. And then after that, we're looking at the real, you know, difficult ones. Preston, I have 15th because Boxing Day, as it was, they put on a full English. It's easy. It's a very easy one to do that. It's easy to get right.
It should have been a Christmas dinner.
Should have, yeah. It's very easy to get right. But if it's wrong, then you're not even in the top 20. You're not even in the Premier League of press food league table.
I know who's going to be 20th. I know exactly who's going to be 20th. Carry on.
You're right as well. 16th, we've got West Brom. I just thought, you know, the press room at West Brom is brilliant. It's a lovely arena or area to work from. And probably would have been turned into corporate box territory. If not for, I don't know, they've probably got like a listed building permit or something on that area of the ground of the Hawthorns. But the food wasn't up to code as far as I remember. Swansea, it really wasn't taking me. Fulham in the relegation zone here. I've got them at 18th because it was a cottage pie. Now, it looked like one of those meal prep things that you see on Instagram, you know, in the little, the little Tupperware container. Yeah. And also, just because you're craving cottage doesn't mean you have to have cottage pie. Like, you know, be a bit adventurous with it. You're a Premier League club. You're a West London club.
Okay. Branch out. And 20?
Well, no, we got to get to 19th first.
Okay.
19th, we had Cardiff. Again, that was what? It was just like a pasty.
Mm.
Just, you know, can do better. Do better, Cardiff, you know. 20th, we've got... just scratch the eye here. 20th, we have Sunderland. It was some meat and potatoes, sort of very tasteless. Very nice staff, though, has to be said. But just, again, it's very easy to get right. And
okay, I need to interject now. There are some glaring omissions.
They'll be in the championship, won't they?
That need to be addressed. Manchester City didn't appear in your top 20, and they're in my top six, I would say, top five even.
But that's because I've never done Man City for press. I've had COVID like twice. Right,
okay. That makes sense. Who did I have a really good meal at? I actually thought West Brom was all right, and the pudding was sensational, and I could eat it, crucially. But there was a problem at West Brom that I remember. They wouldn't let me have any chips or potatoes or something with the vegan option they gave me because it was for the main meal, she said, as if mine didn't qualify as a main meal. There is one glaring omission in the Hall of Shame, but you have got that caveat of they being the championship. I'd actually put them in the National League North. That's Blackburn Rovers.
Yeah, Blackburn are like way bottom. They are so bottom. They're not even...
Blackburn have, in culinary terms, they've gone into administration and they've had to start again as a new co. And they're now Rovers of Blackburn and they're working their way back up. They've been in the Northwest Counties League. They've won that, you know, big back in, big crowd in that. And they found themselves in the, I'm not even going to say National League North, I'm going to say Northern Premier League, Division One. That's where they are because, honest to goodness, like, you wouldn't serve that to your enemy, would you?
No, you wouldn't. And I just feel bad for all the Blackburn journalists that go there on a regular basis. Because I hope they've invested in a packed lunchbox.
Tuna sandwiches from the garage. Londis tuna sandwiches, if you're curious.
Right. Also, they were just on a table. It's not like they're even in a fridge. tuna sandwiches that have sat there at room temperature for 3 hours.
I'm sure I recognised one of the sandwiches as well from when we went there during the promotion season. I was sure I'd seen him before. So
also in the Hall of Shame from this season, I've got Rotherham, Ipswich, Peterborough and Plymouth.
Plymouth wasn't great in terms of effort made. I'm trying to think if anybody really stands out as, you know, I'll say this. We went to Millwall once and they put on a lasagna, which, I mean, judging by Popey's reaction was phenomenal. It must have tasted great. But I couldn't have it, obviously. And when I said this to the girl, more in hope than expectation of whether they had anything else, she disappeared and she came back with a full roast dinner. And it was an incredible roast dinner. So Millwall would be in my top six, actually.
Really?
Arsenal wouldn't because, yeah, they do a lot of curries, a lot of cakes. I can't have any of them, pretty much. So
half-time fish goujons. Come on. You're not getting that anywhere else. That's outside the box territory. You get an extra point.
That was good. And also, actually, Manchester United, pretty low down the table for me. I'm not playing to the crowd. I'm not playing to the balcony here, Joe, but I just remember having, maybe this was because I was late, I can't remember, but I just remember eating four sausages in a cup, you know, like a coffee cup, mm-hmm. an empty coffee cup, four sausages in a coffee cup. So my personal experience of Manchester United was poor, but Man City, very, very good. Grab bags of like Haribo, etc. Pick and mix, all of that kind of thing, which Fulham does have as well, has to be said. But Chelsea and Tottenham, you know, battling it out for the title, absolutely streets ahead of everybody else.
Yeah. Southampton are quite high in my list at eighth because while it's not the best food I've ever had, I quite like that it's self-serve. I like that they're able to trust you. You know, if you want to go back and get seconds, do it. And also, sorry, just to segue ever so slightly, I'm just looking at my phone, the league tables on there, my notes app. I've had a notification there for a goal that's gone in a friendly, which you'll definitely be interested in. It's Hull City 0, Curaçao 1.
Wow. This was not on the agenda when they booked their trip to Turkey, was it?
No. I mean, if you were going to go anywhere with Leeds in a mid-season, during the international break, for a mid-season friendly against a country. Oh my God, Vernon Anita is playing for Curaçao.
Is he?
Yeah, off of, you know, one season at Leeds United, five at Newcastle. Oh no, wait, that's completely wrong. Whoever has been working for the Flashco app has mistakenly pressed 1-0 to Curaçao. It's actually 1-0 to Hull.
Ah.
So.
Well, that's a shame. Yeah. But Vernon Anita
is gone. But Vernon, I suppose that does open up the question again. If you were going to go anywhere with Leeds on a mid-season international break, where would it be? And also, which country would you like to see them play?
So they're going to go play an international team. For sheer badness, I'd say America.
As in, like, the team that you want them to play?
I'd like them to play the US men's national team. But I just think the comedy potential that game would have is massive. I mean, it is absolutely enormous. But in terms of where I'd like to go, I mean, putting some kind of boundaries of realism in place, because you really don't want to be traveling. You've only got like a short window. So we're not going to be traveling to Australia as much as I'd like to. I have been there, though, and you haven't. Where would I like to go? That's a tough one. Yeah, where's warm this time of year, but not far? Warm, but not far.
Portugal.
Been there with Chesterfield. Kind of ticked that one off already.
Right, okay. Like Seville. You could drop in, you know, have a quick word with Victor. while he's still in a job.
I don't know that he'd take my call, to be honest. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Somewhere.
This is rubbish, Grin.
Iceland. Rubbish. I'd like to go to Iceland. Not warm, but not far, but also interesting. I'd like to go to Iceland. And in Iceland, I'd like them to play the US men's national team.
Sorry, whoever is in charge of the notifications on the Flash Score app for this particular friendly is having an absolute shocker, because it's now 1-0 to Curaçao again. So what I'm going to do... what I'm going to do is I'm going to go to our colleague from the Yorkshire Post, Stu Rayner.
Stu Little.
He hasn't tweeted that there's been a goal.
But then he also hasn't tweeted for 27 minutes.
So, I'm absolutely none the wiser. Wait, let me...
I look at Hull's. Hull just says the game is underway.
Right. this is a mystery.
It's a mystery fixture.
I just want to know if Vernon Anita has scored. That's all I want to know. I suppose we'll never find out, because we're coming up to the hour mark and we're going to have to put our predictions in for Wales-Finland. What do you think the scores on the doors will be?
2-1 to Wales.
2-1 to Wales. Okay. Interesting. Very interesting. Who's going to score?
Dan James will score. And Brennan, is Brennan Johnson fit?
He is fit, and Welsh, yes.
Yeah, fit and Welsh, so he can score as well.
Okay, so Dan James is going to continue with his goal scoring form. I'm going 1-0 Wales.
Okay.
Because the last time these two played each other, 2021, it was 0-0. So quite evenly matched.
Okay. Yeah, and it'll be a tight game, won't it? These games tend to be. It's not going to be a blowout for either team, is it? In a game of this magnitude, it'd be a cagey affair, I would imagine.
Actually, just looking at Finland's two most recent games, just before we finish, we'll allow this one to go just over the hour mark because this is very important. The last two games that Finland have played, they have beaten Northern Ireland and San Marino. You know, two countries.
Careful. Be very careful.
Two countries on a similar plane. So, Graham, we're going to do a very, 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 very brief quiz here. Can you tell me which team Finland beat 4-0 and which team Finland beat 2-1?
I think we lost 4-0 to Finland.
Yeah, Finland beat San Marino 2-1, but beat Northern Ireland 4-0.
Yeah. So, It was a difficult, very, very difficult, injury besieged, availability ravaged campaign for Northern Ireland. However, history will show that it ended with a very fine 2-0 win over group winners, Denmark, with a helping head from Rasmus Christensen, who claimed the assist for our first goal. And there is much hope for the future for Northern Ireland. So that's what I'd say on that.
Okay, then. Right. Well, we'll have to see what pans out this evening. Hopefully no injuries for Leeds United's players in that Wales-Finland match or any Leeds United players on international duty this week. We'll be back next week ahead of the Good Friday game against Watford, hopefully with some more news on Jorginho Rutter, whether he'll be able to play. We'll probably be at the 10-day mark then Daniel Farke set out for Pascal Struyck's return from injury or potential decision to have surgery. And I think by that point, we'll definitely know who took the lead between Hull and Curaçao. So this has been the Inside Elland Road podcast with myself, Joe Donoghue, and Graham Smith. Bye for now.
The Inside Elland Road podcast is sponsored by PR Supplies at Unit 2 Wither Park Industrial Estate in Leeds. PR Supplies, everything for the home.